chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm excited to have Christine Miles on the show today. Christine is the founder and CEO of Equipped, an author, listening expert, and developer of the Listening Path. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. Well, Christine, welcome to the Something Extra podcast. I have been looking so forward to this time with you today. I told you that on the plane, I was in Georgia last week, and on the plane, I really dug into your book, your newest book, and we'll talk about that. We'll dig in there more. You know, I just have to say congratulations. I just found out that you are a finalist for the Writer's Digest Awards out of 1,300, did you tell me, applicants?
Almost 1,400 applicants. So yes, a proud moment. As someone who got a lot of athletic awards, this is a little different. So I'm proud to have shifted into a different realm. It's a little humbling.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on that. I think you're one of six or something, which is just amazing. You'll have to keep us posted on how that goes. And I know for myself, I have really enjoyed digging into your work, and there's just so much here to talk about. So listeners, strap in. You're in for a treat with Christine. So Christine, I know you grew up in Hershey, Pennsylvania.
I did. Have you been
there? I've not been there, but I've heard amazing things about Hershey, Pennsylvania. And of course, when I think about Hershey, I think about Hershey Park, and I think about, you know, Milton Hershey and the chocolate factory there. What was it like growing up?
Well, you know, it was very idyllic in many ways, a lot of open space. I did not live in the town of Hershey. At the time, it did smell like chocolate because the factory was in the small town right near the park. I did work at the park as a teenager, but I grew up even about 10 minutes from the outskirts, and it was just lots of outside play and a lot of wonderful things about it. As like with most people, there's more to that in terms of my upbringing and how it's influenced my work.
Yes. Yeah. And we're going to talk a lot about that. You know, I know your dad was an entrepreneur and your mom was really the catalyst for a lot of what you're doing today. And, you know, I want you to talk about that a little bit. But I mean, I know that for you, like listening, and the name of your book is What Is It Costing You Not to Listen? And you have spent your whole career really starting out as a therapist, but start your whole career with this art of listening, Christine, but it really stems back to when you were 5 years old. And can you talk about that story a little bit?
Yeah, sure. Like I said, very idyllic in so many ways, and my childhood and even my parents in so many ways, but my mother suffered from mental illness. I often say she came by very honestly, probably genetically as well as circumstantially. Her mother had rheumatic fever as a kid, and her heart was weakened and was told, don't have children. It'll lead to your death. And she refused that medical advice, had my mother. And in fact, that's exactly what happened. She passed away from the weakening of her heart from childbirth. So my mother was really set up for it. The other thing about my mom was that she was very warm and charismatic and loving. And on the outside, she just looked like, you know, people were drawn to her, but underneath the surface was this tremendous pain that most people didn't see. And as the girl in the family, you know, from her perspective, she didn't have a mother. So when the girl came along, it was a bond that she really wanted so badly. And I was expected to understand the pain that most people didn't see. And while there was certainly burden in that, and, you know, that's part of what I still figure out to this day, there's also great gift because I did learn to listen to what was below the surface. And that's been a single thread in how I've been successful in all aspects of my life. That's been the differentiator. So that's a lot of why I do this work, is because the reason I succeeded is often why I see people fail or not succeed as much as they could, because of not the inability to listen or not being taught to listen as I was.
I find that so fascinating, but certainly you started learning this at a very early age, and now you're helping other people. And we'll talk a lot about that, but I don't want to dig into your book yet because I've got some other things that I want to talk about. But I did read the testimonials in the front of your book, Christine. Yeah. I always find those really fascinating. I always go to the testimonials to see what people say. But, you know, a lot of people in your testimonials really talked about not just the book and the content of the book, but they talked about you and words that they use to describe you. Here's how other people see you. Some of the words, Christine: transformational, intuitive, nobody understands as well as Christine, force of nature, incredible, brilliant, exceptional executive coach, friend, supporter. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on. And so this has been a life work for you, you know, but that's how people see you. You went on to college to get both your BS and your MA in psychological services from the University of Pennsylvania. It's funny because I don't know if you want to tell that story, but I think you said something like you bought your way into to the University of Pennsylvania.
I wish I could have bought my way in. I sold my way in. So look, I'm smart enough and I know that, but I certainly wasn't on the par of going to an Ivy League school. I went to a school called Millersville University in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, barely got in because I hadn't taken math past algebra. I know now in part that's because I have dyslexia. So I avoided every major subject until it was pretty late in the game. But I was a competitive athlete. I was a field hockey player, and the coach really advocated for me. So I did well, really well, both athletically and academically once I got there, but I didn't have the scores or the prowess to get into Penn. But I thought, well, I'll swing for it anyway, because that's a little bit how I'm wired. And I had my first job out of college. You had mentioned earlier, I was a home-based family therapist. So at 22, I went knocking on people's doors. I didn't want to go into sales, ironically. That was the other job offer I had. Right. So I went into people's houses at 22 saying, I'll be your family therapist, no experience educationally or you know, in any realm. And I had to do a lot of selling. And because I was listening differently than even my older counterparts, I was building credibility and I was more successful than most. I stood out. So that got me noticed when it came time, because it was a pilot program through Children's Hospital. So when it was time to apply to Penn, I had some pretty good credential people willing to vouch for me. But the head of the department at Penn said, no, you can't do it here. You're not going to make it. We like you, but it's not going to happen. And I was pretty crushed. And I went home and told my dad. And he said, what are you giving up for? Let's write this man a letter. Let's tell him you can do it. I think my dad really, he was a salesperson, a businessman. He understood the underlying concern from the head of the department, which maybe you don't have the scores, but you do have, what it takes to overcome what you don't have naturally? And so I did just that, wrote the letter. And in fact, I got waitlisted and got in and again, did very well. So my father really saw the unmet need and helped me sell my way into Penn. So, yeah.
Isn't that incredible? I mean, listen, Christine, just in that one story, there are so many lessons packed in there.
Absolutely.
So many lessons. I mean, even from that guidance counselor, admissions director saying you'll never make it here. You know, don't underestimate people for one thing. Mm-hmm. Your dad seeing something in you, maybe you didn't have the academic scores, but he knew number one, that, you know, you were, like you said, you were an athlete, you know, so you had, you know, determination, you had the work ethic, you had the learning modality, you know, to do well. Mm-hmm. And wow, there's just so many lessons just in that one little story, Christine.
Yeah. And I was grateful. I still remember that moment walking into the kitchen and my dad, and I talk about this in the book, the exact words of tell. And it wasn't just the admissions person. It was the head of the chair of the department. And I will give him, he was right to doubt it, because I showed up at Penn and I went, oh my, there's some really intellectually smart people here. And I was a little over my skis at first, but again, because I listened well, I navigated well, and that was what got me through. If I was just relying on my intellectual horsepower, it probably wouldn't have been enough. But because I had the emotional quotient, that helped me in other areas to overcome. And so I think that's what was so helpful that my dad did, is he said, let him know you can do that. He saw why there was doubt, and he helped me really make my first big sale, as I often like to say. We're all selling. Zig Ziglar said it, right? When you're trying to have your kid not drive, you're selling, right? So how do you sell? You better understand what the need is in order to tell the right story. That's really what my dad did for me.
Yes. Well, I'm glad that you mentioned that with Zig. I'm a big Zig person. I remember reading so much of his material early on. But yes, that we're all in sales. We're trying to convince other people of, yes, and that's selling. You know, there is a quote in your book, and I love this. I love this, Christine, by Kobe Bryant, the late Kobe Bryant. He said, there is power in understanding the journey of others to help you create your own journey. I think that that is so beautiful, you know, and you happen to believe, and I do too, you happen to believe that listening is one of the greatest gifts we can give and receive in life. And you've already mentioned it, but you have attributed this different way of listening. It's learning to listen differently as a big contributor to your success. It's been a game changer for you, right? At university and even through your career.
Every realm, I started to notice that in high school, as I shared in the book, that, you know, I was invited to the senior award ceremony. I had no bloody idea why I was going, because I knew it wasn't math, science, and even athletics at that time. My best friend growing up was the star athlete, even over me. And so I was perplexed. And when I got there and they announced I won the Good Citizenship Award, I still was kind of dumbfounded, because I wasn't a kid that was doing volunteer work or raising money for organizations. But I know I was showing up and really community-wise listening to those across section, all across my classmates. And I was understanding. And I think that's why I was recognized. And so I certainly have more language around it even than I did then. But I knew that that was something special and different that was noticed. So, and that also helped me athletically, because I was a good athlete, but I wasn't the strongest or fastest. But reading the game, reading my teammates, knowing how to motivate, all that was part of the listening that I was able to do. So that made me more effective and more successful. So it is really such a powerful skill, and it is a skill. I thought I was intuitive, and that was so kind of you to read the words that people wrote. I should take that in a little bit more. I need to go back and read those beautiful testimonials. But it is really, I thought it was just this thing I had. But as I've deconstructed it, I realized, and I see this with my nieces who they're older now, they listen similarly, because this is how we were languaged as a kid. My father did this, my mother did this, partially because of her psychological stuff. But it wasn't built like this as a system, but it was all kind of there. So I've just deconstructed it.
Yeah. Well, it's just beautiful. Well, you know what? That's a perfect segue, because let's get into the book, you know, and I want to talk about the subtitle. So the name of the book is What Is It Costing You Not to Listen? All right. And the subtitle is The Power of Understanding to Connect, Influence, Solve, and Sell. And I think about, Christine, you probably do too, but I think about Covey. You know, and Covey, one of his rules was seek to understand before being understood, But there's power in that. There is power in that. So it's divided into three different sections. Number one, why listening is important. We'll dig into that. I mean, and truly, we're just going to scratch the surface here, Christine. But what I really hope is our listeners will go out and buy the book. Go out and buy the book, engage with Christine. We'll talk about how to do that later. The second part is how to listen differently. We've already talked about that. And then the third is the listening path. Let's start with why. You give this analogy in the book. You say, making a mistake driving, you know, we might have an accident. We could get a ticket. We could get the finger. You know, that if you're making happen. A mistake, you could get that.
The horn, right?
That's right. But if you make a mistake listening, it's not always obvious until often we have a big mess on our hands.
It's true. It's death by a thousand cuts in relationships. We might hear you're not listening, but we don't necessarily even hear that all the time as the real horn or the real warning sign. Just to go back to tying that into the title, the reason I went against a lot of marketing or medical advice, as I like to call it, to name the book a problem instead of a solution. What is it costing you not to listen? My opinion is you can't solve a problem you don't know you have. And because we're not taught how to listen, we're told from a very young age, why would we know this is a problem? Why would we know we're not driving well if we were never taught to drive? That's kind of what we're doing. And the subtitle was as hard for me to kind of describe as the title, because I know the word understanding, people get it. But what it can really do for you is help you connect, right? It also earns you the right, because that's part of what conversations are about, is earning the right to solve a problem or sell a solution or give advice or to influence somebody. And we tend to rush to that before we've really earned that right. And that's why the Covey quote is so powerful, because when we understand first, then we really get the permission slip more so to do that. And that's what I wanted to help people learn how to do.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. You know, I just thought that this was so interesting. On page 56, you've got some stats here. And in business, you know, you say 40 to 80% of your time in business is really supposed to be listening, right? But the years of training is zero.
Zero. Crazy, right?
Crazy.
This, and but it's off it when I've asked people how important is listening or is listening important, universally the answer is 100% from every level of the organization is a resounding yes. Nobody's disagreeing with that. But the interesting thing is it's assumed instead of taught, like walking. We have legs, we'll learn to walk. We have ears, we'll learn to listen. And that's really where I think there's a huge gap. Even a lot that's out there, including the quotes and that I respect and support my work, which is seek to understand first. That's great. But how do you teach somebody? We're missing a big step here. We're missing how to do it, not just that we're supposed to do it. So I think people are very well intended. And I know by teaching this and my team from teaching it, even when people are well intended to listen, they still fail because of that lack of education. Even with good intentions, they still fail.
Well, I want you to teach us a little bit. I want everybody that's listening to this, Christine, to come away today being a little bit better of a listener. And again, I say a little bit better of a listener because this is a journey. But I love what you said in the beginning. It is a skill. Most things, even, you know, and I know that you're an EQ, emotional quotient guru. I mean, you've been teaching that forever. And a lot of people think, oh, you know, they're extroverted or whatever. They've got high EQ. They're good with people. It's so much more than that, isn't it, Christine? And it's something that you can move the needle on.
You know, you're going to have to lose 5 pounds or 10 pounds. You know, you have to eat less and move more. At least you know what to do. Most of us, that gives us a better chance of it happening. Even if we don't do it, we know how to do it, right? But with this, and I think emotional intelligence can be very arduous and hard. And I think it's so, we've complicated it so much that it's hard for people to want to lean into it. I think what we've done and I've done is help really simplify it. I often say I'm an athlete that doesn't like to run, if you throw the ball, I'm like a dog. I'll chase it all day for hours. I played 3.5 hours of tennis last Saturday. But if you told me to run for 3.5 hours, I would think you're crazy. So what we have to do is simpler for people to develop their emotional acuity. And really how to do that, listening is the foundation of the house. If you're self-aware, you're listening to yourself. If you're others aware, you're listening to others. So we move the needle on so many things just when we learn how to develop this skill. Emotional acuity is a byproduct, like chasing the ball and running. It just automatically goes up. It doesn't need to be forced.
Mm-hmm. But what you're saying is, just like building a house, the listening is foundational to that, right? So if you do not learn that skill well, it's going to be hard for you to connect with other people. It's going to be hard for you to be aware, you know, even self-aware. So there's so much more here. I know that you've worked with CIOs. I want to dig into that, what you've learned in working with CIOs. There's so much more, but we do need to take a quick break and we'll be right back with Christine Miles.
In business, the tendency is to seek out partners who are bigger, faster, stronger. When it comes to IT, you should be looking for smarter, faster, better. That's just what you'll find with the talented technologists at Technology Partners. Our experts develop custom solutions to tackle your most complex challenges, all to simplify your processes in the smartest, most efficient way possible. The time to be swift and nimble starts now. Go to technologypartners.net/solutions and see what's possible.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with Christine Miles. So, Christine, I'm just like hanging on every word here that you're saying, because this is such an interesting topic to me, but it's not just an interesting topic. I just feel like it is such an important one. But we closed out the first half just talking about emotional intelligence. And you had said, sometimes we complicate this. We make it so complicated, but you and your team have really simplified how to grow your emotional intelligence. And so why don't you let us know about the how? Give us some practical things that we can do to grow our emotional intelligence.
Yeah. And like I said, I think there's a lot of facets to this, but really the ultimate emotional intelligence tool, and one that why we call it the listening path, is because it's the path to a story. And when you understand story, just like marketing understands story now, we know we've been passing all kinds of lessons down through stories for thousands and thousands of years, is that it really is the ultimate vehicle to develop this self-awareness and others' awareness, right? When we know how to understand our own story and understand the story of others, that is the way we can really connect and be in a different emotional place and raise that quotient. So we call it the map to the story as one of the primary tools on the listening path. If you don't know where you are, it's hard to know where you need to go. So, and when you're listening, you're always gathering a story, whether it's a 10-minute story or whether you're at the grocery store checkout and you ask somebody how their day is, you're getting a mini story all the time. And so when you understand where you are and the story, that really helps you what we call be the guide in the conversation. Just like you're guiding me today, you're guiding, you know, you've prepared, you know, the story that you kind of need to help me tell from reading and doing your homework, right? Like a good journalist. Well, that's how we're supposed to be approaching conversations. Not that we already have the answers or know what we're going to talk about, but that we know that there is a story to get. That's the first thing we need to focus on.
Yeah, that is so good. Well, and you have a lot of questions, and I love it when people, and I love this about your book. Let me tell our listeners about this. I love this about Christine's book. Every chapter, and I mean, it's a fairly good sized book. I mean, there's how many pages here? 382 pages. I mean, it's a good sized book.
74,000 words to be almost exact.
Oh my goodness.
I had the word count going.
I bet you did. Well, it's a good sized book. But at the end of every chapter, what I love is Christine puts in there kind of a recap of that chapter in the main points, you know, so it really does make it easy to sit and kind of reflect on what you've just read and really kind of internalize those things. So I love that. But one of the things that you do in here is you ask a lot of questions. And I love that. You said, what is the story that other people are telling about you? it's always a story, right? We're telling ourselves a story about ourselves, Christine. We're conjuring up a story about someone else, you know? I think you even had like a, and I'm trying to pull this out of my, I don't know, I don't have this specifically written down, but you had a story about a lady named Brenda. And, you know, the story that you were telling yourself, and it was a little bit different story when you dug into it. But, you know, that's a good question to ask. What's the story that other people are saying about you?
Well, that's really the heart of listening, isn't it? So most of what happens, just like with my mother's situation, was going on below the surface. And so we're showing up in sales meetings, our relationships, our business conversations, really with two stories, what's on the surface and what's below the surface. And most of what goes on below the surface is without consciousness, right? It's in our subconscious. And so we need to bring that to the surface. That's really what emotional intelligence is, right? Making awareness greater and putting language around it. So if we understand the story that people are telling themselves about us, that helps us help them understand who we are, which is why I think part of what we do is help people tell their own story. And just much like I did, where does my work come from? Where's your passion and purpose come from? Because I learned in my 30s, I did a lot of diversity training. I worked for an EAP when I starting at 28, an employee assistance program. I was a counselor for 6 months, and then I started running the organizational development side of things, doing a lot of training, and I was doing management training without being a manager, which was interesting. But stories are powerful. I had my manager stories that I could tell. But what I learned is when I went out, I would ask people, instead of introducing myself, to guess what my primary and secondary dimensions of diversity were as a way to start the conversation. And universally, I got the same answers. At the time, like I was from the South or Connecticut, neither which was true, that I grew up upper middle class, not true, that I was married, which at the time was true, and all these kind of perceptions of me that were very consistent no matter what audience I went to. And I thought, isn't that interesting? That people have a common narrative about me, 50% of which is not true. So if that was happening, that's the basis of bias, right? We all have it. We sort, the brain sorts for safety and on experiences. So how do we really level that? Well, and this is part of the story, both listening and telling. We meet people of what I say in the middle of the movie. So I walk into the room if I'm 30, 40, 50, 60 years old, whatever time in my life. Well, people think they know me, or I expect that they think they know me based on where I am now, but they don't know my backstory. So until we take them to the beginning of the movie, they can't really know who we are. And this is so important in leadership, because we expect people to trust us because we're the leader, when in fact we have to help them know us and why we are here today and how we got here, versus just that we're here now, that we're here to serve them. We have to prove that a little bit. And our story helps shape that.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. So rich. There's just so much there. You've got a radio show called the Executives Leaders Radio, and you interview executives. You dig into how they were between the ages of, I think it's 8 and 14, right? That is so interesting, Christine. Number one, tell me why you dig into that age bracket. And then I'm going to turn the tables on you a little bit, and I'm going to ask you some of the questions that you asked them. Is that fair?
Sure. That's perfectly fair. I wish I could take credit for the genius behind that is Herb Cohen, who's the founder of the show. And they recruited me because this is a story we help people tell in business, because we know it's for sales reasons, leadership reasons, this is a powerful story. But I learned a lot and from over the years from working on the show. And really, when you cement people in where they are in their beginning, it really gets them quickly to how to figure out what their purpose and passion is. So it was fascinating to listen to CEOs and the commonalities in their stories, because when you go back to 8 to 14, you'll see themes that show up that really are fascinating in terms of the way they were raised, when they started earning money and various things. So, and we also learned is that when you put four CEOs together and they get to hear each other's stories, guess what? They make powerful connections, and then business starts happening. We think it all has to be hard talk, when in fact, it doesn't just have to be football talk either. We can actually relate on a much deeper human level and even get there faster with just going back a little further in time.
So I'm going to ask you a couple questions. Okay. Because these are some of the things that you ask. You know, we've already talked about your mom and dad. I know your mom and, you know, your dad was an entrepreneur. He was a businessman. So that's one of the questions you ask. But, you know, how young were you when you first started earning money? And what were you doing when you were earning that money?
Well, my dad had me earning money pretty fast via allowance. I grew up on 3.5 acres of lawn. Grass. And so I was mowing the lawn for 4 hours, 4.5 hours at a pop from a pretty young age. So probably, I want to say 9 or 10, and picking up, he was a golfer. I'd pick up golf balls. So doing stuff for him. And then outside the house, I started babysitting. I babysat a newborn at 13. I don't know what they were thinking, but like a brand new baby. I was a highly responsible kid. So I did a lot of babysitting.
And what about siblings? Because you talk about siblings. That's one of the questions you ask. And we all know that birth order sometimes, you know, sometimes it doesn't follow, you know, personality types. And if you did Myers-Briggs, didn't always follow the birth order, but many times it does. And it explains a lot, really, it can. So what about siblings for you, Christine?
So I have an older brother. And interestingly, we were so different. And because I was the anointed girl, I didn't envy him in some ways because I was many ways the golden child. So I'm sure it wasn't always easy for him. But so in some ways I felt like the oldest, even though I was the youngest, because I was the one that was so relied upon. And again, some of that wasn't quite right. That was just part of the dysfunction of my family, but it was also part of what was necessary. So I was the go-to more than he was. So I never got the youngest child. And I never got away with much. Let me just say that. I was always like, you're the responsible one. Be responsible. Hence the babysitting at the infant at 13. Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, we could just dig into this forever, you know, and just, I'd love to know like your brother and what he's doing now. I mean, it would be so interesting to kind of tell that story. But, you know, I want to get to this. There's so much more I want to get to. But, you know, I told you I love chapter 8 of your book, Christine. And this is, I cannot even tell you how many conversations I have had recently with people around this. And I think even, you know, what we're seeing, there's an epidemic in young people with anxiety and, I mean, depression, suicide, all these things. And so much is mapped back to a lack of purpose in life. And, you know, so your chapter 8 is knowing your purpose. And you talk about the purpose story, the one word purpose. And I love this quote. You said, people don't really care about how great you are. They don't really care about the degrees you have. They don't care about what you've done. What they care about are the struggles that you went through to become great.
It's so true. I think about the Olympics, right? Especially before the professional athletes were in the Olympics. But think about it. You see somebody perfecting the skill and they make it look so easy and you're into it. But once you hear their backstory and you realize what they went through to become great, now we're hooked, right? Because we don't see the grit and the hard work. And I don't, you know, my one word why, and we call it my purpose story. My word is understanding. So not surprising it's in the title of the book. I believe when you understand yourself and others, that's a key differentiator to being successful. If you have that ability, but everybody has a purpose and a word, and we help companies and people figure that out. And I agree with you with young people. And maybe this is just my perception, but I think there's so much pressure to know what you want to be and what you want to do. And a lot of the college degrees are job titles now. They're not broad. So we're pigeonholing people so fast. I'd be anxious about that too. How am I supposed to know at 18 what I want to do for the rest of my life? The difference between what you do and your purpose is that no matter what role you're in and what job you're doing, your purpose remains constant. That's the difference, right? So it doesn't matter if I was babysitting at 13 or I'm doing a listening path workshop now, my main purpose is to understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's so powerful. So powerful. Well, I do want to talk about one more thing before we move into something extra. You know, I know that you've worked a lot with CIOs. In fact, I have to give a shout out. I absolutely adore this friend of ours, this mutual friend, is Dan Roberts. We partnered with Dan for a long time on a technology leadership experience, helping high potential IT people go to the next level. He's been a dear friend for a very long time. And so I know that he has been of yours as well, Christine. In fact, that's probably where you met Dan, because I know you've done a lot of work with CIOs. Tell me about that work. Tell me what you learned.
Well, first of all, I'll tell you a little story about Dan. So Dan's first job, do you know what it was, Lisa? Picking blueberries.
Picking blueberries. I did not know that. Oh, my goodness.
So we spent 2019 city to city doing conferences together for CIOs. As you know, Dan's a leader in that community. And I would do a little version of the radio show in front of the room with the CIOs, and then I would get the speakers' backstories and what they, you know, a little bit about them. And I said, Dan, what's the theme about that of what you did then and what you do now? He said, well, when you're picking blueberries, you have to be very caring and careful because you can't squish them. Like, you have to really be very gentle, thoughtful, kind, and caring. And I said, what's that got to do with what you do today? He said, well, that's a lot to do what we do with the way we work in my, you know, my consulting firm with CIOs. I'm like, of course, there's a tie-in. Right. Yeah. So that's my experience with Dan as well, is very caring. So, yeah, we've also done work with IT for, you know, teams and a Fortune 100 companies and others. One of the things that I really learned, and I got to credit somebody, Lee Crump, who used to be the CIO of Rollins in Atlanta. And he said, you know, I realized after I heard you talk about the listening and the listening path was that, as IT organizations, we're used to delivering what's asked for and not what's needed. It's really hard to uncover the need, and we're not trained as engineers and IT professionals to ask those questions to really uncover the need. This is a game changer in terms of being able to do that. And so he was a big inspiration in why I decided to write the book and get the message out and really make this very process-oriented for people. So that people who were process-oriented, it's almost like learning the piano. The more you know the process, the more effective and faster you get there. And so part of that is really to uncover those needs, whether in sales or IT or wherever you are, because that's really getting to root cause helps us come up with better solutions and helps us save a lot of money and time and resource.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the listening, we're in IT, as you know, Christine, we're full service IT staffing and solutions. And I tell you what, without those good listening foundational skills, you can go off on a tangent with a software product that is completely not what the customer, as you said, really needs or even wants.
Sensible? Is it sustainable? Is it really? Look, I can think I know what I want, but I'm not the expert. But I'll take on the expert role unless you guide me well, right? That's the conundrum of what you have to do. I know enough to be dangerous. You have to talk me off the ledge and take me back and show me that's not the way to go, right?
Right. And you know, to your point, I'm just thinking, that is a really good consultant or a trusted advisor is the one that knows the right questions to ask to really get to the root of what that is. Well, there's just, I'm telling you, we have just scratched the surface here. We're running a little bit long because I just feel like this is so important. And I know this is going to help our listeners. I would say she's got the listening path. She's got the six most powerful questions. We're not going to have time to dig into all that, but go connect with Christine. She has got other podcasts out there that she's done, the Tim Fowler Show. She's active listening in the job interview. So if you are interviewing or if you're an interviewee, you know, that might help you. What is it costing you not to listen? Encouraging us to go deeper by telling me more. Tell me more. Tell me more about that. And I even found myself doing that with our grandson, Christine, the other night when he was telling me something about school. And I said, tell me more about that. I mean, it's a great question to ask to get them to open up. You know, it's so good.
We had a client a few weeks ago say his 3.5-year-old now, after going through is using the same tools, and they're having this is music to my ears, right? To have a child learn how to listen. You know, it's game changing, not only the relationship between father and son, but also just what we're putting into the world now is completely different, which is, so tell me more is a powerful question.
Yeah. Well, I'm an evangelist for you, Christine. I love your work. And we didn't even touch on this, but Christine right now, when Christine and I first met, she told me about this and I said, oh, this is so important. I cannot wait for you to finish this. She actually is doing a game right now, a listening game that they're hoping to get into the schools to start teaching children at an earlier age, you know, this art of listening and listening differently, listening better, really, seeking to understand. So I cannot wait. I don't know if you got an update on that, Christine, since you and I talked initially, but do you have an update on that for us?
Yeah. So right now the game and the kit, it's everything you need on the listening path, is really to facilitate what it's part of what our clients get as part of the bonus of working with us. It's another asset that they can use to really drive listening differently in their organizations. The ultimate goal, hopefully in about a year from now, will be down the road where we're getting this into schools and maybe even into the families' homes is ultimately the goal, but we're not quite there. But it is a bonus for clients. And because and get to the actual tools, and they're in the book, and the book is really the guide. But if any of your listeners wants to know more, they can certainly reach out. And we normally charge for this, but we'd be happy to set up an hour kind of walkthrough where they get one of the tools that they can, even if they don't do any other work with us, we're arming them with something that they can start to listen differently. So reach out if they're interested in that.
Yeah. Well, I really, truly believe this could be a game changer. It could be a game changer in so many areas, Christine. But I have to ask you, this is something extra. And I think I know the answer to this. But what is
it? It might be obvious.
It might be a little obvious, but what is the something extra that every leader needs?
Well, you know, I'm very biased on this. So because 80% of executives' time should be around listening, it's to develop the skill of listening. So that's the obvious answer. So please do that just for your family's sake, if nobody else's sake. But the other one, and I think you said it, is I think every leader should know their one word purpose. They should tap into that so that they can share that in 10 to 30 seconds with every person they meet, because it's a game changer in how they connect and bring people along. So that's the other thing that I think is really the something extra, that we're able to communicate that very clearly and succinctly. I'm sick of the, let's go around the room and say, how long you've been here and what do you do? Now let's talk about why we do what we do, not just what we do. That's Ooh. A big, big difference.
That's another great question. Okay, I'm going to rip off and duplicate that one from you. I'm going to use that next time I have a meeting like that. Well, listen, Christine, this has been just such a pleasure for me. Thank you so much for making the time. I feel like I've had a little bit of my own therapy for the day, so I appreciate you, and you, what you are doing matters. It really does, and I do believe that with all my heart, that if people could really grab a hold of this, could be a game changer in so many different areas.
For sure. Well, thank you. And I don't think I've ever had anybody do their homework as well as you have. I mean, so thank you for that. I appreciate you being such an avid learner.
Oh, very good. Well, thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.